Welcome to the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. I'm Spike Eskin with Mike Levin of LibertyBallers.com. Mike?
What's up, buddy?
We have a guest today. As usual, I'm not going to make pretend like we didn't already talk to him, but as Mike and I have teased on Twitter, it is a former Sixer, of one of the best Sixer teams of all time. Mike, would you like to reveal our guest?
His name is Eric Snow.
There we go. His name is Eric Snow. So we talked to Eric.
Not Garth Snow.
No?
Former Flyers goalie, although we got him next week.
Yes, it'll be a weird podcast.
And then we got Al Snow the week after that.
Right. Then we have just Snow, the rapper guy, the singer guy.
And then we have just like Snow, like sort of condensation.
Yeah, it'll be a quiet podcast.
But it'll be very soothing.
So we'll talk to, and there is some podcast after Eric Snow. We have some quick Evan Turner stuff and relationship advice to get to. But we talked to Eric about his new job as director of player development for SMU, where Larry Brown is the coach. We talked to him about playing with Iverson and the Sixers, playing with LeBron, the current NBA landscape. And yes, we do ask him the question, did you fall asleep? I didn't want to do it because he was so nice. I should include Mike and I's G chat in the text of this post. So here is, in the body of this post on SpikeEskin.com, you can check Eric Snow's profile on Thuzio, where you can book Eric for personal appearances. You can book him for golf, dinner, speak to your school, speak to your team, all that kind of stuff. So it's at Thuzio.com, but the link is in this post. So without further ado, that's been enough ado, right?
Plenty of ado.
More than enough ado. Here is our talk with Eric Snow. We have a former Philadelphia 76er, former Cleveland Cavalier, former Seattle Supersonic, current director of player development for SMU, and our old friend Larry Brown, Eric Snow. Bright and early. You're with us bright and early. When does your day start? When does Eric Snow's day start?
It starts when my kids get up and get ready for school, so that's around 6:30. I have to wake them up. During the week, I have to wake them up for some reason, but on the weekends, they all of a sudden can wake up on their own. I don't get that.
I remember doing that, too. I think back to when I was in middle school and high school, and the fact that not only did my mother have to wake me up, she had to wake me up three times every morning to get up for school. I'm amazed she didn't kill me. I look back at it. I'm amazed she survived to this point, or that I survived to this point. So, player development for SMU, I guess through your career of playing and then broadcasting, did you ever think that your career would head in this specific direction?
When I look at the title, no. But when I look at what I do, yes. When I think it was a situation where I was blessed and fortunate to be in the situation that I was in, and what you do now, you know, what I do now is basically trying to help develop young men, and that's what it's all about. It's a form of giving back. It's a form of sharing your experiences and helping them become better players on and off the court.
So how much of it is on the court, and how, I guess, take us through what the day is like, because you know, we hear titles like what you have, and you know, aside from head coach or general manager, I don't think anybody knows what those titles do. So take us through what exactly it's like.
Well, I mean, it's not a recruiting position in college. It's like I can't really do a lot of the basketball stuff with the players, but I can do everything with Coach Brown. So it's really like being a coach, but I don't work the guys out. But I do everything else except, and I don't recruit off of campus. So my title, what my title say and what I actually do for Coach Brown aren't always the same. It's really what he needs. He may need a practice plan. He may need, you know, how we're going to guard a team or a game plan. So most of my talk is with coach as far as basketball, and most of my talk with players is about life.
So with Coach Brown, now that you're on the other side of things, what's it like sort of behind the curtain now that you see from the other side? Is it different that you didn't know things would be that way?
Yeah, it's different. I think that, the main thing that I didn't realize while we were playing is how much he uses his assistant coaches to help him, you know, make decisions. I didn't realize that playing with him, you know, maybe because we were trying to listen to him when we had to. But no, you kind of get away, and he's such a dominant, a head coach is such a dominant figure when you're a player,
right,
that you hear your assistant coaches, but they're almost like echoes of the head coach. Mm-hmm. And everything seems to come from the head coach, but being around him now and a different element of being in meetings and spending time with him, and the time that I'm spending with him now, I didn't spend with him as a player. So it's different. I mean, you get more of the person than the coach.
Did you like better playing for him or working with him?
I enjoy both. But I think working with him, because it's playing for him, you got the same, you know, off the court, he's the same. Playing for him and working with him. Coaching with him, it's a little easier than playing for him. You don't get yelled at, and you're not as sorry as you are as a coach. You know, maybe I can play a little bit or think I can play when I'm coaching, but when I'm playing, there was days when I couldn't play very good.
He has a reputation for being sort of transient, from hopping to place to place. You go there to work with him. Are you ever worried that you'll wake up in the morning and there'll be a missed call from him, and that's the one that he's, you know, he's going to coach an NBA team, or he's going to a different school? Do you worry about that?
No, I don't worry about it. I don't worry about it at all. I think if something like that was to happen, I think I would have a clue.
You would hope, at least.
I think I would have a clue. I think I don't have a sense of that. I don't have a sense of him leaving or wanting to leave. I think in the past it's, you know, his style, but, you know, everyone talks about him leaving. Well, the one thing about leaving is someone else wanted him. So he had an opportunity to go for whatever reasons, and that's something I've never discussed with him, why he left town. And I knew and understood the Philly situation was the only thing I knew about. We talk a lot about the New York situation, but his previous stops, I had, no idea, don't really ask, why the change.
You guys at SMU just pulled in a pretty big prospect in Emmanuel Mudiay. Was there any role in at least maybe scouting or basically what was your role in that? I mean, you said you really couldn't do too much in the way of recruiting.
Well, I think these guys that want to be pros. I mean, mm-hmm. That's what they want to do. They want to be pros. And if you're put in a situation where you can help most of these kids accomplish that, if they feel like I get to go in and play for Larry Brown, and I get to go in and have any kind of conversation and knowledge with Eric Snow or George Winston, somebody that's been there, trust me, they, anything that's going to help these guys get to where they want to go, that's something they will look at. So it's a plus having NBA guys on your staff if they're definitely about helping the young man and sharing the experience. Excuse me. Even with our current players, I think it you get their attention more when when you've been where they're trying to go, and they know it's real. They know it's not just somebody just saying this. They know it's real. They know, they understand that the path that you've taken is a path that they would love to take.
How are college players different than when you were in school?
Excuse me. Just had this conversation not too long ago. I think the biggest difference now, and it's probably more in life also, is entitlement. The entitlement factor, I think, is really, really hurting, sports, life, our youth. That, when I came into college, it was probably five or six or seven guys that felt like they should start or play a lot. But nowadays, everybody thinks they should start and play a lot. Everybody does. No matter what year they are, no matter if they put in work or not, it's like, and it starts even with my son and my children. It starts even younger than that, because these kids will play on the club or travel team. If they don't play, or even if they play or start, they don't like how many shots they take, they just go to another team. Mm-hmm. And that's why the transfer rate and all this stuff is, you know, I believe they said it was 500 transfers or so last year. When I came out of college, or when I was in college, if you transferred, you were almost looked at as like, what's wrong with you? Are you a bad guy? That's how I was kind of looked at, to transfer. Whereas this, so that part of it is like, you got to talk to a guy a certain way, you may leave. And like, it's different. Like, I'm just like, well, this, not that Larry Brown's like that. I just know that, well, Larry Brown isn't like that. But I know after speaking with a lot of people that they have treated guys that way.
Seems like people are more sensitive, you know, growing up in the system of you're going to be a basketball player. You sort of get that treatment. And when you don't get it, at least, you know, on a silver platter, it's like, well, you know, I got to go start somewhere. I deserve this, you know?
Yeah. I mean, they basically say, hey, I'm starting or I'm leaving. That's how they do it. Well, I'm better than now. It's not about team chemistry with some guys. It's not about, you know, seniors, you know, the whole senior thing. If he a senior, oh, that don't matter. They could care less about that. Basically, I don't care if he's a senior or not. Like, I'm not planning on staying 4 years, so it don't matter. So that is just mind-boggling to me, how you get your, like, when I came out with the class of the Fab, you know, Fab Five, that class out of high school. So everyone knew Chris Webber was leaving early. Everyone knew Glenn Robinson was leaving early. Like, everybody knew Jason Kidd, and everybody knew those guys were leaving early. It was no secret. But now, you never know. Scotty, you borderline want to start. All of a sudden said he's a pro. On the team that didn't really play that well.
Does that make it...
you got to recruit. The recruiting changes, and it's just the whole thing is kind of different.
Does that make it less likely for you to, you know, assuming that you want to stay on this path, whether it's player development or, you know, or coaching or front office or something like that, does it make it less likely for you to stay doing it in college and more likely to, you know, future down the road, look toward the pros? Or, you know, how does the change in it make you feel toward staying working in that game, in the college game?
Oh, I mean, it hasn't been a deterrent to me in college. I think I would enjoy an NBA opportunity, and I enjoy the college experience. I was just saying it's different. I mean, that was just a major difference and something I had to make an adjustment to, but it hasn't been a situation where I want to run from it.
Right.
I enjoy what comes with it. It's a different grind. It's just a different situation. And of people you have to deal with, but at the same time, you still got the same age, and being around these guys as much as I am and getting to know them, it's different because you have a relationship with them, an experience. And then when you kind of can sit down and reach them, and I think with the guys like this year I've had conversations with, and they kind of see things happen. And it's almost like they've experienced it. Then you kind of see their response to how much they appreciate what you've shown them, and dealing with some things that come their way. You know, whether it's, you know, their playing time that they are worried about, or whether it's school or class or problems at home or with a girlfriend. It's so many different things that are coming at a 18, 19, 20-year-old at one time, and a lot of weight put on their shoulders. So that part of it I love. That part of it I would, you know, love to continue to do. So, you know, if something else comes, I still have to be able to accomplish those things.
I would love to hear, I would pay to hear Eric Snow relationship advice to young men. I would be on board with that. Eric, so let's talk about the 0-1 team. I'm sure you've talked about this a million times. But do you ever talk to Larry about that 0-1 team and you're like, man, I could have used a few more shots?
He knows that. I told him in 2001 I could have used some more shots. That wasn't the secret. I mean, we had guys that that we all felt, you know, hey, we can we all want more shots. I mean, it was just a matter of Coach Brown whether you complained about it. Did it affect the rest of your game? And that's the part that we didn't have. Like, we didn't have guys that complained about it. Guys kind of knew, hey, you know, this is our team is built around Allen shooting shots. So if you look, but the interesting thing, if you ever look at the games that Allen didn't play, it was like a race to see who was going to get
a lot of shots at 17 seconds left on the shot clock.
There was one year where Allen got hurt to start off the season, and I think it was the first maybe 12.
But we were all but we were all hurt. Like it was Allen, myself, and Aaron. Neither one of us played like the first five games.
Right. There's a lot
and it was people. Like that's different though. When you take everybody out, but when he didn't play, like it was funny because when he didn't play, and the majority of us, Aaron, myself, and maybe Dikembe and some other guys, we all got shots. Like we were all sit around in the locker room, and as much as you know, the shots that Allen took, we will all be like, man, you know what? We all talk about we want more shots, but it takes a talent to shoot 30 times.
There's been with Allen's official retirement, there's been a lot of like looking back on that era here in Philadelphia, and it's looked on very fondly. I would say it's funny, you know, two of the teams that are looked upon most fondly in Philadelphia, I feel like, are the 93 Phillies and the 0-1 Sixers. Neither team won at all, but I feel like those two teams are beloved here most. Did you enjoy playing with Iverson?
I enjoyed it. I mean, he's a great teammate. Like, if you really, really dissect Allen Iverson when he was in Philadelphia, went with us, you never heard teammates dislike him. That was never a conversation. Mm-hmm. It was, you have some guys that didn't like playing with him. I mean, guys don't like playing with LeBron sometimes. Yeah. But you think everybody liked playing with Michael Jordan? They just like winning championships, but they just like playing with him all the time. So that part of it happens. But he was fun. I mean, he made everybody laugh. When he was on the court, he played hard and he competed. I mean, I think that the way that he played was the way that we needed him to play to win. We needed him to be that guy to be most successful, and it worked for the most part. We were, you know, winning 50 games and almost winning 60 games in the season. And we were tough to beat. We defended. I mean, there was a lot of other different things that we did. That team was a defensive team. That team was a rebounding team. And that wasn't all Allen Iverson. That was all just about, you know, guys sacrificing their game to help a team get better and win games.
When you look back on it, how much do you feel like there's been a lot made of, you know, his practice habits or how he lived his life, you know, how he took care of himself? How much do you think that stuff held him back for being as good as he could have been?
I think later in his career, it probably held him back more than earlier in his career. I don't think earlier in his career, I mean, there's a lot of guys that early in their career was doing what he does or he did. It was just the fact that when your game has to change or your game, your body changes, you have to make adjustments, you know, in your life, even if it's just rest more. And I think that he was such a talent that, you know, like most of us now, like myself, that have gained weight, have to make an adjustment in life because I can't no longer eat whatever I want to eat. I can't just, you know, do whatever I want to do. It's adjustments that you have to make in your life as you get older and your body has put a lot of miles on it. So I think that for Allen, he was such a dynamic athlete that he never had to do anything like that. And I think when it came down to him having to do that, it was a tough transition. It was a tough transition for that to happen. And then I think some unforeseen circumstances with, you know, getting traded to Denver and Detroit and everything being pretty much blamed on him. And I never really heard why. And then it just came down to the part that I think is, you know, was unfair, is that he just wasn't really given, you know, opportunities that you see other guys have. I mean, for different reasons. I mean, I like Derek Fisher, but could Allen Iverson do what Derek Fisher is doing? Yeah. But would Allen Iverson be willing to do what Derek Fisher does?
Yeah.
That's the part that has been questioned with him, whether he would be willing to do it. I think with the right situation, he probably would have, but I know he could. And I don't think he was really given an opportunity to do that. And I'm not, you know, able to say whether that was, you know, wrong or right. I'm just saying it was never given.
Yeah. I think that we talk about this a lot on the podcast. Guys who just sort of more accept their roles. You look at a guy like Evan Turner with the Sixers right now.
Yeah.
At least beforehand, now he's starting to come into his own as a premier player on the team. But beforehand, it was you know, he's coming off the bench, or he still thought he was the, you know, the number one guy, and that was hurting, you know, his play on the court, because he still played like he was the number one guy. But there's other guys ahead of him, like Andre Iguodala, like Lou Williams before that, like Drew, and he was sort of, I don't know, I wonder what you think about this, you know, not picking his spots so much?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think Evan was a guy that, with the Sixers, I think that what he's doing now is something he probably felt he could always do.
Yeah.
Excuse me. But it was a different team. It wasn't really needed for what that team. I mean, that team had other guys that could score. They had, you know, but they, what they needed him to be was more of a distributor and a defender, sort of in the middle of Andre and Drew Holiday, sort of down the middle guy.
Right.
And when you have a guy, and it was a tough situation for him, because in that position, he's more of a catch and shoot guy than a one-on-one guy. In that situation, but his game is more of one-on-one than catch and shoot.
Yeah.
So that's the major reason why I think he's having more success now, is because you're eliminating a lot of that catch and shoot play that he had to do with the other guys and the other team. And now you give him the ball and say, hey, you're the guy. Do what you do best. And he's showing what he does best. That's if you allow him to play this way, this is what you're going to get. But I don't know. At the end of the day, his numbers are great. The team is surprising, but they're still a losing team.
Mm-hmm.
So,
what's that feel like? You know, Andre Iguodala on the team, Sixers have the number 2 draft pick, and if you're Andre, then the Sixers take Evan. What's that feel like to be like, well, that's my replacement right there. That's the guy who's going to take my spot, or I'm going to get moved.
I mean, well, I've been there. I mean, they drafted, what, 2 or 3 point guards when I was there?
Yeah. Or at least what they thought were point guards.
Yeah, you know, so it was supposed to be the point guards. I mean, it keeps you on top of your game. I know that. It keeps you working. It keeps you, you can't put your guard down. But I don't necessarily think that Andre kind of looked at it that way, because it's, 2 positions. It was, you know, the 2 and the 3, and mm-hmm. I think Andre's always considered himself to be more of a 2 and a 3. So I didn't really look at it. I didn't really look at it as him being his replacement as much as I looked at it saying they didn't complement each other.
Right.
I always thought that was funny that, you know, Andre was always clearly a small forward when I watched,
yeah.
But you would always see him introduced as shooting guard / small forward.
Yeah, he wanted to be a shooting guard.
And I feel like Evan's the same way with point guard. I feel like they announce him as small forward, but for some reason in his head, I don't think he thinks small forward.
It's something about those labels that they don't like or something.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter.
Do you still watch a lot of NBA?
Yes, yeah, oh yes. Me and Coach Brown talk about it every day. We talk about 1 or 2 games that we watch. Yeah, we keep up on it. We have friends that we talk to. that are coaching, or I don't really have many guys that I talk to that play. But I have a lot of guys that are friends that are coaches. I knew a lot of guys from the staff last year. I've talked to Coach Brown this year, Brett Brown, and I'm good friends with Lloyd Pierce. I know him really well. I played against Greg, but I don't know him that well. But Lloyd Pierce, I know really well. He was player development in Cleveland when I played for Cleveland. So I know him. But, you know, I don't really call the guys. If I see him, I'll talk to him. You know, Monty Williams and I are really good friends, so I'll talk to him. So I just watch. I watch the teams that I play for the most, and I'll watch a good game or a big game. But I stay in tune. I mean, I know the standings and where teams are and how they're playing. So I stay in. I don't watch every game, but I do know what's going on.
How's the NBA landscape, changed since you played in the league for 12, 13 years? Do you think your game, you could just drop it in right now without much of a change and you'd be able to play the same role? Or do you think that things have evolved to the point where you'd have to evolve your game to play the way
it's played? Yeah, I think I would have had to change a little bit. I think I would have had, unless I played for Larry Brown. If I played for Larry Brown, I wouldn't have had to change anything. If I didn't play for Larry Brown, I think that's a part of when I left Cleveland kind of hindered me a little bit, because I was trying to play the same way. And I know that, I found out later as time went on that they kind of wanted me to be a little more aggressive or score a little more. It was just kind of, I was kind of stuck in a way that I had played for so long, but I was thinking that was the way I needed to be, but it was a little more. So I think you play with different coaches now. All of a sudden, they want their point guards to attack a little more, especially with the difference in the rules. It's easier to get in the lane. It's easier to draw fouls. It's easier to make plays. So I think if they can have a more aggressive point guard that can still set up the offense, I think that, I don't necessarily think I would have had to be a knockdown three-point shooter, but be a less reluctant shooter. And I think you kind of open up your drives, which opens up, collapse the defense and get teams in foul trouble.
I'll tell you what, if you wanted more shots, the Brett Brown era Sixers would have been the team for you, man. There's a lot of shots to be had in there for everyone.
Their numbers are all going up. So hopefully the numbers under the W column can keep going up.
It's like the Brett Brown coach is like a PED for players.
You don't want to spread those rumors, Spike.
No. I didn't mean really a PED. We all know.
No, you start mentioning that, people start to get sensitive.
Having played with LeBron at for a very successful team, and when he was sort of a different version of what he is now, are you surprised at what he's become? Did you always think that he would become, I guess, what he is now, or did it surprise you a little bit?
Well, I knew he had the potential to be one of the best ever. I think the part that people don't realize is how much better he is now than he was then. People gave him 99% of the credit and no one else the credit. But if he was as good then as he is now, Cleveland would have easily, I think, won one or two championships. Easily.
Yeah.
He was more reluctant to make plays at times. If he wasn't making free throws, he wouldn't attack the basket. He would have the lows that people were saying that he had in Miami every once in a while. He had them more often in Cleveland, where he was trying to figure it out. The San Antonio Spurs played him the exact same way in 2013 as they played him in 2007. The exact same way. Mm-hmm. That's 6 years later. But the difference is he was able to change and come up, whereas then, he never was able to do anything for four straight games. Like, he couldn't adjust. He couldn't handle it. Didn't really know, they're making me a jump shooter. Do I keep shooting jump shots? So how do I get easy baskets? Do I get out of it? Like, he couldn't figure it out. He was too young to really, in the moment, really, and the experience was so new and fresh that the guy that went to the finals then, at that age, people forget it, he was what, a junior in college?
Yeah, what have been.
He could have been 11 like years old.
So you don't see many of that because people look at Durant. Look with his first finals appearance. Those guys were the moment kind of got to those guys a little bit. Look at Harden, all these guys that top guys in the league, when they got to the finals their first time, it was the moment was a little different. Except for Russell Westbrook, he's a different breed. He's a lot like Allen. It's like his mentality.
Yeah.
Having
sort of the things that make you great, so the things that people complain about sometimes with those guys make them great.
Having played with the 01 Sixers, the 07 Cavs, take LeBron off those Cavs and take Iverson off those Sixers, which team was better? Which team had a better supporting cast?
The Cavs.
I lost.
I would say that also.
Yeah, this was not a long-standing disagreement, but a disagreement between Mike and I that I guess I have to.
The Cavs had a better. Like people don't realize that that team with the Cavs had Larry Hughes, who was coming off of an All-Star season at Washington, having 20-plus points. Ilgauskas is one of the best shoot centers that can catch a shoot. They had Drew Gooden, who could really play. myself, I was better in Philly than I was, but I knew more. But we had Daniel Gibson, who could really shoot it. And then Philly, I think our sixth man, Aaron McKee, was better than any sixth man that we had in Cleveland. Mm-hmm. I think we had George. So if you go from point to two, if you take them out, I just think that for our team, we were a much better defensive team in Philly.
Yeah.
Especially because of Dikembe. But if you took those guys away, the Cleveland on paper had more talent. But if we played the game, I think the Sixers will win.
Ah, see, you've rekindled the argument. Okay, that's, I like that.
You just want me some money, Eric. Thank you for that.
Yeah. On paper, I think. Because Cleveland, if you look at, they had Damon Jones and Donnie Amar. These guys were coming off. They tons of teams were trying to sign these guys.
Yeah, and
we're talking about on paper. Like, yeah, we had Kevin Ollie, Jermaine Jones, Roger Bell, who had just signed with us out of the YMCA league. seriously, he was playing YMCA with his dad, getting ready, getting in shape. We had just signed him in April. Rodney Buford, Todd McCullough, like that's who we had. Mm-hmm.
So Eric, you're in the sort of unique situation in that you're coaching right now with an NBA coach as the landscape of the NBA is sort of changing in that there are teams that are, you know, especially this season, because the draft class, looking at this season in the NBA and going, maybe it's best that we don't win too many games. Maybe it's best that we, you know, you can say tank or otherwise, but the idea is this season doesn't matter as much because, A, we don't have the talent in various places, and, B, the talent coming into the draft is so strong that it's worth, you know, sort of losing a season for. How do you feel about this whole now stigma of losing games to get a better pick?
I don't really look at it as tanking,
right?
Like most people do. I look at it as a form of planning.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know, you're trying to put a plan together to help you win, to help you, you know, be better in the future. So it's no different than, I think, any corporation will say, well, can we take a loss here in this quarter or this year to then be better for the future. I mean, people do it. I mean, I think it's just when you do it in professional sports and when you do it in basketball, I just think it's so different because I think that the thing that really hurts people is the fact that guys that play on that team and fans that are so passionate about that team, you're basically saying, well, we're going to play hard and try to win, but we're not trying to win a championship. And that's right. What it's really supposed to be about. So you aren't really tanking to lose, but you aren't really trying to win a championship.
Mm-hmm.
Because winning a championship would hurt what you're really trying to accomplish.
Yeah, it's
like you sort of get, as you get into the dog days of March and April and, you know, you're 20 games out of a playoff spot, you start to look at it and say, well, okay, what's our priority? Do we maybe rest this guy who's got a bit of a foot injury but could probably play? Like, it's a very gray area, and I think the NBA...
That's what I'm saying. So that, yeah. At the end of the season, if we're out of the playoff hunt, do you not play Michael Carter-Williams, who need as much experience that he can get? Do you not play him?
Yeah.
Like, David, so if you sit him down and he needs to develop, because as our team continue to get better and they start adding these pieces and these draft pieces, the one thing I know about the city of Philadelphia, as you've made us wait, and now you're going to put this team together, and when these expectations come, then we expect results.
Yeah.
So that's the part that hasn't happened yet with these young guys. That's the part that I think if they can't get over that cliff, it's going to be tough, because that's something that, oh, we've been patient with you all. We like the way you guys play hard. We like this transformation. But it's going to come to a point where, okay, we waited, so what do we wait for?
Yeah, exactly. Better get us one of those good guys kind of thing. So
we've been able to talk to Eric today thanks to his involvement with Thuzio, where you can book Eric for personal appearances, play golf, dinner, all that kind of stuff. Are you a good guy? I've tried to stay away from golf my entire life. Are you a good? Have you had to become a good golfer now that you're a front office, now that you're a suit?
Well, I have fun. I like it. I like to play. I wouldn't necessarily call myself good. But you could have a nice time.
and a nice conversation.
We can laugh
and
talk about a lot of things, but you know, let's not, you don't have to worry about beating me.
you're already sort of conceding that part of it.
Yeah.
Before we let you go, we have to ask you about one thing. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you, and thank you for your time. We've heard your explanation before, but I've got to ask you, that moment when you're on the air with Zoom off, did you or did you not fall asleep for a moment?
That's so funny. You know what? It's not even, like, close. Like, it wasn't even, like...
No?
It wasn't even like, did I take a nap? No. It wasn't even like it was mind-boggling to all of us that it all came out like that.
Have you gone back and listened to it and see why you could think that?
No. I know exactly why I did it. Why I did it was because it was the last game before the All-Star break. And we were going through some stuff. And I was just rambling and talking and talking. And JR, you know, producer was like, man, you sure talking a lot today. And then Sue started adding in, talking about, yeah, you talking so much. And I said, when I get on there, you ask me a question, I'm going to just act like I can't hear you. So it was like that. So he said something, and then I just sat there. And he was like, oh, pardon me, what, you sleep or something? And that's what happened. Like, it's amazing. It is absolutely amazing that it took off like that. Absolutely amazing.
Because listen, and it's funny because I, you know, doing radio here, when you have a producer in your ear, it can be super distracting and nobody listening. Goodness. And I still don't deal with it very well. But when I watched it and listened to it, I was like, oh, well, there's no way he didn't fall asleep there. Like, it sounded so clear to me.
Absolutely amazing. And if you know Mark Zumoff, the last thing that he would say, if I did do it, is, pardon me, you went to sleep. Think about that. You know what I'm saying? Wouldn't he, like, nudge you or...
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, you think Mark Zumoff would do that if you know Mark?
No, yeah. Well, he's like a...
He threw you right under the bus.
Yeah, he's like...
You see what I'm saying? Mark would never do that.
Yeah.
But although, it was almost like people were asking him why he would do that. You know what I'm saying? Like, he was calling me... Like, I had went to Mexico straight after that, like the next day after that game, and I started getting all these texts and people talking about, are you okay? And I'm like, what is all these people calling me about? Like, what's going on? So I didn't even know. Then boss called me, and Zeus sent me a text talking about how sorry he was. And I'm like, what? So I had to call people to find out what they were talking about. And that's what they were talking about.
Will you
be,
you'll be happy?
I was just like, when did I, what else, mean, what do you mean I fell asleep? Like people still ask me that. Like, the guys on the team ask me that. It's hilarious.
Well, I'll tell you what, man. No one would blame you based on the Sixers season.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's funny.
It's funny, too, because Larry Anderson, who does the color for the Phillies here on the radio, actually... He denies it, but he did last season. It was they were coming back from a commercial, and Scott Fransky won't totally admit that it happened, but they won't deny it either. So,
you know, it's so funny because I did NBA TV first for 2 years, and that was, I'm working at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning sometime, and didn't do it then. Now, that was a time that I wanted to fall asleep, and I never did it then. So why would I do it at – and it was – I think it was the first half. It was a 7 o'clock game.
That's just funny, man. It's so funny that people say that.
Well, we really appreciate your time and wish you the best at SMU. You're obviously a great part of Sixers history. And if you – I'm sure you know because you've been here enough, but that team is certainly revered as one of the great teams in Philadelphia sports history. So we appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
All right, thanks, Eric.
Thanks a lot, Eric.
All right, I'll take it easy.
What a pleasant man he was, that Eric Snow, wasn't he? He was pleasant.
Really nice guy.
Yeah, really nice guy.
I was sort of – you know, in typical Red Ricky Sanchez – fashion, woke up to your phone call, didn't prepare anything whatsoever. So I didn't pee.
Wow. And you did good.
Yeah.
Yeah. He was really cool. So thanks to Eric. And again, check out his profile on Thuzio and that's it. And
wait a second.
What's that?
I'm very upset about something. I realized this right after you hung up.
What?
We should have asked him if he had any clue what the name of the podcast was. We should have asked him, do you know who Ricky Sanchez is?
Yeah.
Do you know what the rights to Ricky Sanchez? Do you know anything about
Just so you know, I never told his guy what the name of the podcast was, so he wouldn't have known, but it would have been funny if we asked him. Maybe he knows Ricky Sanchez. One of these times, we're going to have enough guests where somebody's going to have, maybe he has he played, maybe he played a practice game once with Ricky Sanchez. That would be great.
Ricky's got to get on the podcast.
Yes, we'll get Ricky. Well, he doesn't have a Twitter, so that makes it, you know, more work than I care.
Then we're willing to put in.
Yeah, but we'll find Ricky Sanchez for the podcast at some point. But thanks again to Eric and his I believe him with the falling asleep thing. Having been on the air and having guys talk into my ear before, it's the most.
Yeah.
I had a producer once that kept doing it, and I was like, dude, I can't talk when you're talking to me. I can't. Please stop doing that. And he never stopped. So
I'm surprised by his answer to the tanking. More recently.
He was very pro tanking.
Yeah, he sort of was just like, you got to have a plan, and I'm like, I'm into it. Like I'm pleased because you'd think that a guy working with Larry Brown. You heard like Krzyzewski talk about tanking and just totally just shit on it, but it's cool like to hear that he's like, you know, no, you got to get those players. I mean, what's the point, kind of thing. So,
yeah, it's penny wise or pound foolish. That, you know, that old proverb that you don't know.
What are you, 85?
Yeah, you know, I have my knickers on. You know what we should have done? We should have just started playing him Doug Collins clips and see how he would react
to it.
You think he would get as frustrated as I do?
All right. Quick. Let's do the... Just because I want to make sure I had time for this, because I promised him we'd do it.
I tried to tie in the relationship advice, Derek. No, he wasn't really on board, but I tried to tie it in.
All right. Relationship advice from a regular Writes to Ricky Sanchez listener and Liberty Ballers reader and a long time and a overall good guy. He was the guy that did all the fan interviews at Media Day for the Sixers, at Mr. Dang Dang on Twitter. He writes, I had an idea about relationship question of relating to the upcoming holidays. Maybe you can mull it over. By Christmas, I would have fully paid off and have in my possession the engagement ring that I'm getting for my girlfriend. As you know, these things, congratulations, by the way, I've met his girlfriend. Very doesn't like basketball, pro basketball at all, but goes to games with him and sits
killer
upper level on the end. So it's not even like he's bringing her like courtside. There's nothing swag about going to a Sixers game right now and sitting in the upper level. So he'll have it paid off. As you know, these things are kind of pricey, like a certain percentage of our net worth pricey. My question, is it okay to give an engagement ring as a Christmas gift, or should you also give a separate Christmas gift?
She doesn't know.
I get the sense
proposal.
She doesn't know. Yeah.
So first of all, you're saying she doesn't listen to this podcast?
Well, that's the suggestion. Yeah.
I know. First of all, you can do better. I think you need a Christmas gift.
Yeah. Well, so having sort of done this, not sort of, in that I proposed in April, and I did it 3 days prior.
Christmas is in December, Spike.
Yeah, but I'm getting to it.
Okay.
I did propose 3 days prior to my now fiance's birthday.
Okay.
So it was around then. And some people had asked me, you know, do you now have to give a birthday present? Look, here's the deal. Is that, no, really, she's not going to care if you don't. But she will notice if you don't. I think the difference is that you don't have to, if you were going, I'm just throwing numbers out here. If you were going to spend $400 on a Christmas present, you don't have to spend $400 anymore. You can narrow it down to the cutesy, thoughtful gifts, you know, and not go the all-out big gift. And that's what it's always been for me, you know, with gifts. There's like the big gift, even for my parents, and then there's the cutesy, thoughtful stuff or whatever. You don't have to spend, you know, clearly. And here's the bonus. No matter what you get her, it's going to be overshadowed by the ring, and she's going to love it anyway. It's going to, like, the halo effect of your proposal is going to be drenched all over this Christmas. But here's the thing. I would do it before Christmas. I would do it on Christmas Eve or something, because if she at all is expecting this to happen and thinks it might happen on the holiday, and she's waiting for it to happen, and it doesn't happen, then it's going to be a bummer. So I would do it before. That's my advice.
I was thinking, get just like make her something, like just even just like a macaroni plate with just shit. Like there's a nice, like something that will reinforce the idea that like you're the one she wants to spend your life with. But here's the thing. What if she says no, bro? I'm in your corner. I hope she doesn't, but you gotta say, like, what if she says no? So I would, if you're going to get another gift, get something that you could also use.
Like pans?
Yeah. Something that you would also like, where if she says no, which I really hope she doesn't, because I don't blame myself, that you can then look at after and be like, well, I'm going to keep this for myself and not, you know, set myself on fire with it. If it's like a piece of lingerie, say, for example.
Or just keep the receipt.
Or that's probably better. Keep the receipt. Keep the receipt.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I thought we were wrapping up. There's so many other things I want to talk about.
I know.
But it was, you know, it's nice. Maybe, you know, Eric's still a nice guy.
Well, yeah. I mean, we don't have time to. I guess there's the Evan Turner trade rumor stuff. Real quickly, like straight up to the Bulls doesn't make any sense to me, because I don't think there's anything that they'd be willing to give up that we'd want straight up if they can somehow flip whatever you get from the Bulls to someone else, you know.
Well, it's are we willing? Do they want to give up Carlos Boozer? Do they want to be like, because they're going to amnesty him after this year anyway? But do they want to save the money and trade him now? Because we the Sixers can take on a lot more money than we're giving up. So I believe, and someone on Liberty Ballers wrote it,
that you could, it could be a Boozer for Turner swap straight. And then for essentially taking on their trash, we also get a pick.
Get a
or
pick.
Two.
Right, right. I mean, it, as long as it ends up, it's just that most of what people were suggesting to me, and I just can't imagine, like, now the Bulls are notoriously cheap. So if, you know, if they would, you know, if giving the Sixers a first round pick is worth not paying Carlos Boozer's salary for a year, mm-hmm. is one, that's wonderful. But boy, I would hate to be a Bulls fan if that's the case, especially with their future sort of in question anyway.
Right, and they do have two picks. They have a protected Charlotte pick,
right.
which I believe is protected top 10, and then their own.
But still,
I'd love to get my hands on that Charlotte pick.
Yeah, it would be wonderful. But I just, you know, whatever. And we don't, you know, we don't have time for anything else. But
well, there was a Derek Williams trade or almost trade. I don't know if it's gone through yet for Luke Richard and Bamute.
Yeah, to Sacramento.
That's not much for Derek Williams. I mean, he's a fine player, and for Minnesota, I think he's going to help because he's just a, you know, they have plenty of guys there to take shots, and he's just going to be helpful on the defensive end. But man, Derek Williams.
Yeah, second pick for nothing,
and that,
essentially.
And that sort of bums me out for A, that the Sixers couldn't get him for, you know, Jason Richardson. Obviously, it's not going to happen, but something.
Yeah,
it's not much.
I guess.
It's really just not much. I think it's going to work out for both teams, but just like in a vacuum, like, what did you get for Derek Williams?
Well,
that's not much.
And I'll tell you, you know, I mean, who knows what the future holds, but if the Sixers are able to get something significant for Turner, it would really show a really, you know, Turner's probably a better player. Well, is a better player right now, but giving him the ability to show that and the value you got for it. I mean, Minnesota was not in the place to do that, clearly, because, you know, they have to win right now. But it really, it really shows, you know, it will show the advantage to doing that. I really genuinely have no idea what the market for Evan Turner is. So
yeah, it's so much. It's, you're just guessing and hoping that his value is higher. But like, you know.
It could be nothing.
It could be nothing, but if there's one thing to take away from, you know, the early season wins, which people are generally freaking out about, it's that, you know, Evan and Spencer's trade value is going up. It's absolutely going up. You know, it's been 15 games. Evan has been hot and cold at various points, but still averaging, he's still averaging over 20 points a game. And Spencer is, like, Spencer's legitimately an MVP candidate right now. Honestly, like, he should get MVP votes.
With that,
he didn't win the MVP. No, don't you shrug that off, Spike.
With that,
don't you shrug that off.
With that, we're gonna wrap up the podcast. You've been great, Mike. Go Pig.
You've been better.
See ya. Like I said, won't you hit son?